I wanted to start out just on a lighter note with the foundation of the SEC Nation, which is on Saturdays prior to SEC football. I read a story about Laura Rutledge expecting, the baby's expected in October. What's that going to mean? Is there going to be a change while she's away?
Yes. She announced that Friday night, and I don't think she knows, as anyone about to have a baby would know, exactly how long she could work. She's going to try to start the season, and it's anyone's guess whether that will work out. But she's been the host for the last 2 years. She followed Maria Taylor, and of course you may remember Joe Tessitore, who's now on Monday Night Football, was the host the first 2 years.
Now, the other thing I had, and then I'm going to get to some more heavier issues. What happens if the Mets, God forbid for Tim Tebow, but if they call him up to that circus, what happens if he's called up in September? Does he just say, well, look, I'll see you later. I got to go do the show with Paul Feinbaum, and I'll come back?
Yeah, sure. By the way, that would be the, considering the state of the Mets, that would be the smart move. I'm just a person in the peanut gallery. He has not had a great year, but considering what you said a minute ago, and you know that market, really, as bad as the Mets are, I think the three of us could probably be in the starting lineup at Citi Field in September, and it wouldn't make a bit of difference. So I don't think he'll go up. I think he's expected to be with us early in September. But with Tim, and I say this very affectionately, he's a close friend, and I love him like a brother, but you really don't know what's going on with Tim until he shows up. I mean, it's like traveling with the biggest rock star in the world. You don't get simple answers, Lee, I promise you.
Okay, I got a good one now. Based on that New York Post story about the GM apparently or reportedly calling in from his house to change pitchers, just think if you could impersonate his voice. That, let's say a Mets fan or Frank Galliano or somebody say, hey, look, that guy's not pitching well. Get him, call up Mickey Callaway and get him out of there.
You know what's interesting about the new GM of the Mets, who's just being eviscerated by the Cowboys these days and everyone else? He his prior job was the lead baseball agent at CAA, Creative Artists, and he was Tim Tebow's agent. So he's the one that brought Tim into baseball 3 years ago. So there's a very strong connection there.
Okay, Paul, let's get into more interesting stuff. Of course, so you've been, before you became a very well-known radio analyst and host, you certainly were with the newspapers and wrote a lot of, let's say columns that got, after people and so forth. Based on what's been going on in New York between the manager and the reporter, I'd like to get your thought on that because my feeling is that there's certain individuals that are above and beyond this, and like a Nick Saban, it'd be tough, to deal with that if you're going to constantly criticize them, although you've had your moments with him. But for the most part, the media usually is going to win out in this case. Can you recall some of the contentiousness that went on between you and organizations?
Sure. No, listen, it started in college with players and coaches, and I've had in the day, coaches grab me, push me up against the wall. Players threaten me, and it's part of the business. And in New York, it's accelerated because where in Mobile or Birmingham or Tuscaloosa, there may be some give and take. Most of the relationships are cordial. In New York, they're adversarial, especially for those who aren't familiar. You have two main and really three tabloids up there. Even though the newspaper business is a shell of itself. And the more controversy, the more people walking down Third Avenue are going to buy newspapers. So I've dealt with it. Fortunately, I don't deal with it too much anymore. Saban and I did have a fairly well-publicized altercation live on television and media days 3 years ago. But even that was Nick Saban grandstanding to get a message across. It had a lot more to do with the message than with me. He was just Saban is like a lot of very smart politicians. He's just waiting for the question where he can go off. And I was the one that finally gave him what he wanted that day.
Paul Feinbaum, our guest here on WNSP. As you know, Paul, and to your point, and what I think a lot of these coaches, managers, execs, whatever, don't realize is when they go off like this, you're doing exactly what a lot of these media types want. It's like blood in the water, and these guys are going to feast. With that said, we also talked about there are very few guys that can kind of control the script, that can control the message. Saban is one of them. As far as college football is concerned, who are kind of the guys, in your opinion, today that can control that message, that can control that media narrative?
Well, there aren't many. Within the SEC, I think I would think Dan Mullen and Jimbo Fisher are pretty good because they have a lot of experience. Kirby Smart is crafty as well. He's just not quite the media maven as the other three. But, yeah, probably one of the best I've ever seen was Steve Spurrier. I had him on the show yesterday. And Spurrier just, he was always prepared. He always had a message. That's what Saban does. I'm baffled sometimes, guys, by these coaches that show up at these press conferences without anything to say because the media is looking for a story. That's what we all do every single day, especially guys like you, where you're on the air for so many hours. And I mean, I've seen coaches literally just show up and go, "Okay, what do you guys need?" And that's, I mean, be prepared. It's really not very difficult to have something to say when you show up at a press gathering.
Paul, did Steve invite you to his restaurant as a guest?
You know, I'm going to pass on that, Lee. I just, with all due respect to Steve, I've never heard anyone know less about his own restaurant than Spurrier last night.
Paul, I got to ask you, because you mentioned about when you first started out, coaches pushing you and players pushing you and things like that. And I remember very vividly, since I was up there, the to do with Saban. But is there any one that really turned out to be something that you said, like, you know, this is ridiculous, you know, where it really became a grudge between you and an individual, where it really got out of hand?
Well, I've had some altercations with coaches. Both were you know, nearly violent, and some that just never talked to me again. There was an Alabama coach, you may remember, Dennis Franchione. I called him once. It was a fairly volatile story that I was working on that I'd been told by another sitting SEC head coach. And I called him, and I didn't bring this up in a threatening manner. I just simply said, "Coach, I'm looking into something involving you, and I've talked to various people about it." He didn't respond to my question, Lee, and I had this longest pause of about 45 seconds, and I finally just said, "Well, thank you, Coach. I appreciate it." That was before his first game at Alabama. He never spoke to me again because he was so concerned about what I had brought up in this conversation. So yeah, I mean, sometimes it's not verbal. This was nonverbal and was probably the most awkward 45 seconds I've ever spent on with a coach or a player.
Paul Feinbaum joining us. Want to shift to a transfer portal.
By the way, for a free pass at any diner in town, I'll tell you what the question was I asked him, and it would be the lead story on Mark's website this afternoon. I'm not going to say it, by the way.
Well, oh, that's it. Lee jumped in. I was getting ready to ask the obvious question, and so okay, all right. You're a tough cookie to crack. If this was New York, Paul, it would be certainly be a different narrative.
I'm saving it for the sequel to my memoirs.
Yeah, or July before SEC Media Days, yeah, where things can really get started.
The problem is that I mean, you could run a headline on Dennis Franchione on the front page of AL.com, and there may not be 100 people that would even know what we're talking about.
Yeah, but all I got to do is put in there, hold the rope, and add the word Feinbaum, and things escalate
exactly quickly.
Paul, we're running out of time, unfortunately. Of course, looking forward to having you back many more times. But let me ask you this. What can be done about the transfer portal? Coaches, when I was down there, you were down there at the spring meetings, it's getting overloaded. You get guys that are leaving a school and going to another and all of a sudden deciding to go back into it. What's the solution?
Well, it's a cliche, Lee, but I think once you open the fence and the horses get out, there's no putting them back in. And I think the intentions of this legislation were very good. But I think now to try to restrict it is ridiculous. I happen to be in favor of players being able to do whatever they want. Coaches can, everyone else can, except the player. So I'm probably the wrong person to try to put more restrictions on something that I think has been very oppressive to young people for a long time.
As always, we really appreciate your time. We'll be in touch. Thanks so much for the stories.
You're not going to tell us what the question was, Paul?
I'm getting close to it. Listen, I don't even know if Franchione's still alive anymore, so I'm not sure it's fair to bring it up. But one of these days I will, Mark. Thanks.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you tomorrow then, Paul. Enjoy your day. Hey,
you got it.
We appreciate it. Thanks, Paul.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.